His head flinches to the side, a fraction of an inch, before he catches it and faces us square again. He doesn't like thinking about this. I didn't make her do anything. Asked her to. Let's say that. I asked her, yeah. She could have told me to stick it. She didn't. And did you read them? I'm hoping he didn't. Mainly out of professional pride. I like to hope that if a murder D set up a plan to walk in on his bit on the side with her bit on the side, he would have made a better job of it than this mess. McCann buries his face in his tea, but I catch the faint flush under the stubble. Out of all the options, this is what gets to him. The image of himself grubbing around in Aisling's text messages. He's still holding on to how he loved her in his mind. That snooping is the one thing he's done to taint that. A few times, nothing worth seeing, and I felt like a twat. I stopped. I believe him. McCann knew nothing about Rory, not till Saturday night. Aisling's frantic plan to move things along did nothing at all. Lucy was right. She was miles out of her depth. I ask, do you make your wife keep her phone on swipe lock? Don't get smart with me. No, I fucking don't. The shame puts a snap in his voice. I wasn't controlling Aisling. I just didn't want my wife finding out about us. That's why I checked the texts. I needed to know Aisling wasn't telling her mates. That's why I went in the back. That's why I didn't want her having my number. I liked her a lot. Even trusted her more or less, but not enough to put my whole life in her hands. I wasn't about to put myself in a position where, say, she got too attached or had a bout of PMS or got ideas about blackmail. She could just take her phone down to my gaff and blow the whole thing wide open. Is that simple enough for you? Which is his biggest speech yet. Trying to shove that memory away made him talky. So, Steve says dryly, you're saying you had no plans to leave your wife for Aisling, no? McCann lets out a short, harsh burst of laughter, just too loud.
Fuck that. Me and my wife, we have some hassles, but I love her. Love my kids even more. I wasn't planning on going anywhere.
So, what were you going to do? Just keep on climbing Aisling's back wall? I snort. McCann gives me a filthy look. For the rest of your lives? I didn't have plans. I was having a laugh, seeing how things went. Even if he was planning on leaving his wife, I point out to Steve. He would have wanted to keep Aisling on the down low. No point in giving the missus ammo for the divorce settlement. Did you not hear me? There wasn't going to be a divorce settlement. Myself and Aisling were grand, exactly the way we were. I lift an eyebrow. Yeah, did Aisling think you were grand the way you were? McCann shrugs. Far as I could tell, if she didn't, she would have ended it. You're having your cake and eating it, and she gets the crumbs. What kind of person's okay with that? I wasn't taking anything away from her. We agreed from the start that she could see other fellas. Only fair. Nice move. Not a chance it's true. And she took you up on it, I say. When did you find out she was seeing someone else? A quick blink. McCann needs to be careful here. After she died, only. Steve and I glance at each other and leave a silence. McCann's too old a hand to fall for that. He flicks us a sardonic look and waits us out. We'll go with that for now, I say. So, how did that make you feel? McCann snorts. What are you? My therapist. Do you go to a therapist? No, I don't. Do you? Then you don't need to save the good stuff for him. How'd you feel when you found out Aisling had another guy on the go? McCann's all ready for this one. He shrugs. No one likes Sheridan. But sure, I always used Johnny, so what harm? Were you surprised? Steve asks. Didn't think about that either way. Lucy was surprised when she found out about Rory. That gets a sardonic grin. Yeah, bet she was only delighted. Two guys between her and Aisling now, instead of just one. Steve says,
She was surprised because Aisling was in love with you, man. Mad about you. Did you know that?
A twitch of McCann's head like that flew at him. He doesn't know any more whether that was true or not. Doesn't want to think about it either way. He says, careful again, remembering those texts.
Doesn't exactly come out of the blue.
She'd never been in love before. You were the first. Did you know that too?
She might have mentioned it. I don't remember.
So, Steve says, if she was head over heels with you, why was she having a romantic dinner with some other guy?
McCann's good. It's only because I'm looking for it that I catch the snap of pain, quick and savage as a muzzle flash.
Who knows? Women are mental.
Okay, I say, tapping the edge of my mug and frowning at it. Let's think it through. Aisling was in love with you, but not vice versa, right?
McCann's got his control back. He snorts.
Jesus, nah. She was a good girl. Good company. The sex was great. That's all there was to it.
Did she know you felt that way?
I'd more sense than to say it to her, if that's what you're asking.
But you might have suspected. She wasn't stupid.
Might have. I wouldn't know.
If she suspected, Steve says, she would have been devastated.
First love. It's powerful stuff. That didn't bother you.
We're picking up the pace. McCann hasn't missed it. His back straightened. There's a focused blue flash to his eyes. For a second there, I see him 20 years ago. All cheekbone ridges and dark stubble and those long-distance blue eyes. And I see why he still thought he might have a shot with Aisling.
He says, I wasn't out to hurt her, but I wasn't there to babysit either. Aisling was a grown woman.
So could that be what her little thing with Rory was all about, yeah? I ask, trying to make you jealous.
Shrug. Doubt it, seeing as I didn't know he existed.
She kept texts from him on her phone. She might have been betting you'd read them. The raw flush again, the minuscule flinch of his head.
Even if I had, wouldn't have worked.
And Aisling had enough cop on to know that.
Maybe she was using Rory as a distraction, Steve suggests.
I know, sure as I know where my hands are, that he's picked up on where I'm heading. He's right beside me.
Trying to take her mind off you?
Could have been.
Meaning she did suspect you weren't in as deep as she was.
Could have done. She never mentioned it.
I ask, did she ever talk about you leaving your wife?
It came up. Nothing serious, just a mention.
He's stepping carefully again. The texts.
And what did you say?
Brushed it off. Changed the subject. She didn't push it.
Huh, I say. I lean back in my chair, have a swallow of my tea, gone cold, and take out my phone. I go into my email, taking my time, and find the post-it photos from Aisling's secret folder. Civilians' eyes dive on anything you bring out. They can't stop themselves. McCann's don't move from my face. I put my phone on the table in front of him. The small click of it going down snips at the air. McCann waits till I sit back before he looks down. His face doesn't change, but I feel the pulse of bafflement and wariness of him. I say,
there's more of them. Swipe.
He swipes. Keeps swiping. Something else stirs under the bafflement, a wretched twist of pain and something almost like joy. McCann thinks he's seeing proof that he got it all wrong, that Rory meant nothing to Aisling. She was mad about him, after all. After a dozen or so picks, he takes a fast breath and shoves the phone back across the table.
I get the idea.
I say, are these the notes you wrote to Aisling, to let her know when you'd be calling round?
Shrug.
McCann settles back in his chair, hands shoved easily in his pockets, but the taut stillness holding every muscle gives him away. We're building up to the big push, and he knows it.
I don't have to be a handwriting expert to know these are consistent with your writing, I say, but I can get one to confirm for me if I have to.
I can also pull your shift times for the last 6 months and cross-check them against the times and dates when Aisling entered those photos into her computer. I'll bet my paycheck every one of those notes will line up with the time when you were just coming out of work or just going in.
So maybe they're my notes. So I already told you I wrote them.
I made sure to destroy them, Steve says. He's picked up my phone and he's skimming through the pictures.
You thought anyway.
Only Aisling had other ideas, I say. McCann's eyes close against that for an instant. Every time you left her a note, she took a photo, put it on her computer, in a special password-protected folder, and deleted the phone pic. Why would she go to all that hassle?
Shrug. How would I know?
If you had to guess.
Souvenirs.
That gets a laugh out of me. You serious? I take the phone off Steve and wave it at McCann. This is what you think a girl keeps for a souvenir?
I don't know what girls do and don't do. Trust me, it's not. So what was Aisling at?
After a moment, McCann says,
she could have been thinking of showing them to my missus.
You said she was happy with the way things were. Why would she want to do that?
I thought she was. Doesn't mean I was right.
You told us you were being careful in case Aisling got too attached and blew the whole thing wide open. I spin my phone on the table. Looks like you are right to be careful.
Not careful enough, Steve points out.
Looks to me, I say, like Aisling was making plans. She figured if your wife found out, she'd give you the boot and you'd come running straight into Aisling's arms.
Would your missus have given you the boot?
Steve asks.
Nah.
Steve's eyebrows go up.
Nah. No way.
Man, you said earlier she'd throw you out if she even knew you were going for drives with Aisling. If she found out you'd been riding her for months.
She'd have given me holy hell, called me every name under the sun. I'd have been in Breslin's spare room for weeks, maybe months. God knows I'd have deserved it.
The vicious scrape to McCann's voice says he means that.
But we'd have sorted in the end, no question.
I've got an eyebrow up.
Uh-huh.
Easy to say that now.
It's a fact. She'd have made me beg, grovel, but she'd have taken me back.
The kids. Yeah, let's not forget the kids. How traumatized would they have been? That tightens his jaw.
Well, they're grown adults, or near enough. A few weeks of Mammy and Daddy fighting isn't the end of the world.
How would they have felt about Daddy fucking some girl young enough to be their sister?
Jesus, Steve says, wincing. Guaranteed long-term estrangement right there.
McCann snaps. They wouldn't have found out.
No, your missus wouldn't have mentioned it.
She a saint.
Sounds like one, Steve says. She'd want to be, I say. She cares about the kids. She wouldn't have hurt them.
We're going faster, harder, leaning forward, slamming the questions across the table. McCann's meeting us beat for beat, firing back answers without a second's pause. That blue glint grown to a blaze. He thinks this is it. He can see exactly where we're going, and he thinks this theory is where we're putting our money. All he has to do is kill off this one and we'll be left in tatters.
Either way, Steve says, it'd be a lot easier not to go through all that hassle, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it would. Lucky for me that never came up.
Lucky, I say, eyebrows way up. Is that what we're calling this, yeah? We've got a dead girl in a morgue, but hey, look how lucky you got. McCann throws me a disgusted glare and doesn't bother answering.
In fairness, Steve says. McCann dodged a bullet there, all right. I'd call that lucky.
He did, I said. He definitely did that. Did Aisling threaten to go to your wife, McCann? McCann's shaking his head, slow and definite. He's on solid ground here. Doesn't need to worry about Aisling's texts, because he's telling the truth.
Never. She just hinted.
Nah, not even a hint. You sure about that?
Yeah. I am. Positive.
Ask Lucy the leather. Ask anyone you want. Let's see you find one bit of evidence that Aisling ever mentioned going to my missus. One. Just one. We've got 24.
Those notes?
McCann laughs in my face, a wide-mouthed bark.
Jesus, Conway.
Tell me you know better than that.
How are those evidence of anyone threatening anything?
Maybe Aisling was planning on using them to twist my arm.
You can't even prove that much, but you hadn't got around to doing it.
I hadn't a clue those notes existed. I didn't even have access to them.
Password protected, didn't you say?
Computer crime can go through the times when that folder was opened. Show that they don't match the times when I was round Aisling's. Those notes are nothing. I'm shaking my head. Doesn't matter whether you knew about them or not. Aisling could have sent copies to your wife. She didn't. Check her computer logs, printer, work printer, anything she had access to. Bet you anything they were never printed out. She could have emailed them. Go ahead and check our email accounts.
You think Aisling had my wife's email address? How stupid do I look?
Or she just called round to your gaff when you were at work. She didn't. Trace her movements. Look for anyone who saw her around my way. Good luck with it.
Is your wife going to say the same?
That brings McCann up and forward, halfway across the table with his teeth bared in my face in one savage move.
Don't you fucking dare bring this to my wife. She knows nothing about Aisling, and it's staying that way. Have you got that?
Routine procedure, I say, raising my hands. I've got to follow up every lead.
Follow up whatever you want, but if you tell my wife about Aisling, I'll wreck you. You hear that?
Look at that, I say, with a touch of a grin. Looks like your missus finding out about your affair might be a problem after all. McCann's jaw clamps hard. He wants to hit me. I stare back, still grinning, and hope he tries. After a moment, his eyes cut away from mine. He eases back into his seat, rolls his neck.
If you need to talk to my wife, he says, talk to her. But you work around the affair. Even the pair of you should be able to do that.
Ask her if she's had any anonymous letters, any strange callers. I can tell you exactly what she'll say.
But if you need to feel like the big boys for a day,
Steve says, if you don't want us talking to your missus, man, then don't make us. You talk to us instead.
Well, what does it look like I'm doing?
Okay, I say. Where were you Saturday evening? The grin lifts his top lip like a snarl. He leans back, folds his arms and laughs up at the ceiling.
Now we're getting to it. About bloody time.
Where were you?
Are you not going to caution me?
If you want. You are not obliged to say anything unless you wish to do so. But anything you do say will be taken down in writing and may be given in evidence. That gets another vicious huff of laughter. Where were you Saturday evening? None of your business. Which is smart. No alibi means nothing we can break.
No comment,
I say.
Is that what you're telling us?
No, I'm telling you it's none of your bloody business. What'll your wife say when we ask her whether you were home?
Only one way to find out,
Steve says, leaning forward.
We're not trying to catch you out here, man. We're asking. If you can prove where you were, we can stop this whole thing. We'll find a way that none of this ever has to come out. But we can't do that unless we know the story.
McCann throws him a stare like he can't believe Steve actually tried that one on him.
I've got nothing to say about Saturday night. Except I never hurt Aisling.
That's it.
We can stay here all year and that's all I'll have to say to you.
It's not going to be that simple, I say. Remember that witness who saw you hanging around Stony Batter over the last few weeks?
So?
That same witness saw you leaving the laneway behind Viking Gardens just after 8:30 on Saturday night. That gets a snort.
Rory Fallon, was it?
You recognised him?
Yeah.
When we brought him in. Brief shake of his head, wry click of his tongue. He's not falling for that.
Nah. Brez mentioned that Fallon's been doing a bit of hanging around Stony Batter himself the last while. Bit of stalking, right?
Me and Steve don't answer. McCann nods, satisfied. That means he was possessive about Aisling. More than that, obsessive. Probably he saw me going in or out of her gaff one night, did he? We look back at him. Yeah, that would have sent him wild with jealousy. Saturday evening, when he got in our door, the first thing he did was confront her. Ask her if she was seeing someone else. Poor Aisling didn't deny it. Or didn't deny it well enough, and one hand closes into a fist and lifts off the table, just an inch twisting. No wonder he's saying he saw me on Saturday night. He'd have said anything to get you looking somewhere else, and you'd be a pair of fools to fall for it. God knows no jury would. Steve says, and all of us hear the defensive note weakening his voice. No one said we're falling for anything. We're only talking here. McCann leans back in his chair and stuffs his hands in his pockets, one corner of his mouth tugging upward. He doesn't bother trying to keep a triumph off his face. He thinks he's seen everything we've got, held steady against it and blown it all away. He says, what do you think happens if the squad finds out you are only talking to me like this? Over nothing but a few shags? Ah, come on, Steve says. He's practically begging. You're a witness. We had to talk to you. You know we did. I'm a witness to nothing. You knew the Vic. You were sleeping with the Vic. We couldn't just... You ask me very nicely, McCann says, and you don't go trying to scupper my marriage. I'll forget this ever happened. We won't tell your wife about Aisling, I swear. Good call, McCann says. He stretches, rolls his shoulders back. We done here, yeah? Steve gives me a quick, uncertain glance. No, I say stubbornly. Seeing as we are here, we might as well finish up. 5 more minutes? Steve asks McCann. Honest to God, it won't take longer than that. We've just got a few more. McCann laughs and spreads his arms. You want one last shot? Take it. Thanks. Steve says humbly. I mean, no, we don't. We just... I say, I want to ask you about Aisling. What was going on in her head? McCann snorts. This psychological shite, Conway. Honest to God, you need to grow out of that. Rory Fallon got obsessed and lost her head. All the rest, what Aisling was thinking, that's not your problem. Nobody cares. Probably you're right. Humour me anyway, yeah? McCann settles back into his chair on a long-suffering sigh. You told us, I say, just a few minutes ago, when someone who's trying to get you into bed says they love you, like Aisling said she loved you, chances are it's bollocks. They've got a hidden agenda, right? Right. Only Aisling wasn't trying to get me into bed. That just happened. You ran her through the system at the start. Because you thought you might have a hidden agenda, right? Right. And she came up clean. She did, yeah. That was really enough to make you relax. You never wondered again, no? Girl like that, guy like you, and you genuinely figured she was on the up and up. Maybe he genuinely did, Steve says, examining McCann critically. Hormones, man, scramble the brain. Ah, he wondered, I say. He wondered all the time. He hated himself for doing it. Tried to stop, didn't you, McCann? But he couldn't. You know what I think? I think deep down he knew. McCann's lip lifts. You think I don't know what you're at? You've got some nerve trying this shite on me. Go play with Rory Fallon some more. Get Brez to show you how it's done. See if you can learn something. He shoves his chair back from the table. I'm done here. Steve takes the Des Murray family pick out of his suit pocket and lays it on the table. Do you recognise any of these people? He asks. McCann leans over and whips it up, ready to toss it back at Steve after one glance. But the photo catches him. He holds it between his fingertips and we watch his face, held to stillness with all his will, as he recognises Evelyn. Then Des, and fumbles for what the hell they have to do with this. as that chubby little girl and her tentative smile start to ring a bell. We watch the tremor run through his mind, coming from deep inside the foundations as he finally begins to understand. Steve puts a finger on Desmond Murray. He says, "Can you identify this man?" McCann doesn't hear him. I lean in and tap the photo. "McCann, who's this?" McCann blinks. He says thickly, like his mind's too taken up to work his mouth right. "Name's Desmond Murray. How do you know him?" "You already know. We want to hear it from you. He went missing a long time back. I worked the case." "And this?" I move my finger to Evelyn Murray. "Who's this?" "The wife, Evelyn." "And this?" My finger's on Aisling. Steve's leaning across the table beside me, the two of us close in McCann's face, watching every twitch. There's a long silence before McCann says, "That's the daughter." "Her name?" One breath. "Aisling." A second of silence, while that falls through the air.
"You seriously didn't remember her?"
Steve asks, incredulous. "I know she'd grown up and all, but her face didn't even ring a bell. Her name? Nothing." After a moment, McCann's head moves side to side. I say, "She remembered you." He can't stop shaking his head. "That's why she picked you out in Horgan's," I say. "Not because she was a badge bunny and you were a D. Because she wanted to know what happened to her da." "I wondered if maybe it started out as curiosity," Steve says, "or some fucked up way of getting closer to her da." That gets one sharp flicker of a wince at the corner of McCann's mouth. "And then she got to know you. It turned real." I snort, "Hey." Steve says, "Stranger things have happened. Is that what you're wondering too?" McCann lifts his head to look at Steve for a second. The flash of hope is terrible. I pick up my phone again and swipe, methodically, feeling McCann fighting not to look, till I get to Aisling's little fairy tale that she left for Lucy. "Have a read of this," I say, and pass it to McCann. His eyes close once for a second as he reads. When he finishes, he reaches out and puts the phone on the table in slow motion, like a drunk. He doesn't look at us. "Recognize the handwriting?" I ask. Nod. "Whose is it?" After a second. "Aisling." "Yeah. And the bad guy in the story? The one who fucked up her life and now she's planning on fucking up his? You know who that is, right?" McCann says nothing. I can hear his breath, heavy puffs through his nose in the thick, overheated air. When we know he's not going to answer, I say, "That's you, McCann. Do you get that?" Nothing. His hands are over the photo, covering it so he doesn't have to see. I lean in closer, tap the table in front of him. "Pay attention to this part. I want you to be very clear on exactly why all this happened." One flicker of his eyelids. He's got blurry inklings, but not enough. He's desperate to hear the rest. "Remember talking to Aisling about her dad's case?" McCann says, "I never named names." I laugh out loud. Out of all the things he could be worrying about, he picks that. God forbid we should think he's unprofessional. "You didn't need to. She knew exactly who you were talking about. She's the one who steered the conversation there to begin with. Do you remember what you told her?" He shakes his head, trying to think. "How we tracked him all the way to England. How we found him with the bit on the..." "Aisling never... She never said a word. Never batted an eyelid. She just kept listening, nodding." "Aisling was good," I say. "Aisling was a whole lot better at this than you realised. Do you remember telling her how you talked to her dad? How he asked you to tell Aisling and her ma he was okay? And you decided to say nothing? McCann's eyes have come up to me. You didn't meet Evelyn Murray. Delicate little thing. The shyest, sweetest, like someone out of an old book. The one who'd die at the end of consumption or one of them things, just because the world was too much for her. Made of glass, Evelyn was. To the spreading grin on my face. Fuck you. I wasn't shagging her. Never laid a finger on her. Never would have. Whatever, I say. If you cared that much about her, why not pass on the message? Because finding out her man had run off with a younger model, that would have killed her. Smashed her to bits. I wasn't going to do that to her. I say, but you had no problem taking over the rest of her life. Everything she ever did after you walked in her door, every thought that ever went through her head, it had your fingerprints all over it. And you knew it would. I'm leaning in across the table that's specially chosen to be narrow enough that I can get close. See every coarse hair of this fucker's stubble. I can smell the tea in his breath and the stale smoke on his clothes and the acrid reek of rage and terror in his sweat. I'm close enough to draw blood a dozen ways. Be honest with yourself, McCann. That's why you kept your mouth shut, isn't it? You couldn't have Evelyn. But you loved the thought that you owned the rest of her life. Every time she woke up wondering whether Des would walk in the door today. Every time she leaped when the phone rang. Every night she dreamed he was dead. She belonged to you. Did you think about that sometimes? When your wife was a bitch and you were lying beside her daydreaming about sweet little Evelyn? Did it turn you on? Knowing that whatever she was doing at that second, whatever she was thinking, you'd made her do it. McCann staring at me, those bloodshot blue eyes. I've never seen hate like this before, not coming my way. I've only ever seen hate this intimate between couples, families. I've put my finger right between his ribs, onto his deepest hidden places. I've got him. He says low and clenched and right into my face. Fuck you to hell. It was for our own sake. You know what her man said about her? For his excuse, said she'd been suffocating the life out of him for 10 years. Said he was going mental. Another few months in that house would have sent him off his chump. You think I should have told her that? Let that on the rest of her life instead? She wasn't the kind who could throw that off. Move on. It would have wrecked her. At least my way let her keep some self-respect. Remember her marriage the way she thought it had been. Gave her a chance. Except, I say, you got Aisling as part of the package. You never even bothered thinking of that, did you? You took over Aisling's life too. Every day was what you'd made it into. And it was shite. Then she grew up. And went looking for some answers, and then she found out who had deliberately kept them away from her till it was too late. McCann's mouth opens. We watch the moment when something spired and shining explodes with a tremendous roar inside his mind. Jagged shards rocketing everywhere, burrowing deep into every tender spot. I say, let me tell you what Aisling decided. The night you told her that story. She decided it was her turn to make your life into whatever the fuck she wanted. That's why the two of you started shagging, McCann. Not because, hey, dick happens. Because Aisling figured you'd be easier to push around if you were pussy whipped. And she was right. She nearly had you, didn't she? When were you going to tell your missus it was over? Was it going to be this week? Today? He can't talk. I lean in even closer and I say softly and very clearly. The whole thing was a lie. Every time Aisling kissed you. Every time she slept with you. every time she said she loved you. It took everything she had not to puke. She forced herself to go through all that so she'd have her chance to give you what you deserved. McCann's head is down and swaying. His shoulders are hunched like a bleeding animal's trying to stay on his feet. Now, do you understand why she kept those photos? He's breathing like something out of a hospital ward in the pretty pastel room. You were right. She was going to take them to your wife if she couldn't make you leave on your own. One way or another, Aisling was going to break up your marriage. And then she was going to welcome you with open arms and tell you that your wife never deserved you to begin with and you were better off with someone who treats you right. And once the dust settled, once the divorce papers were filed and your kids hated your cheating guts and there was no way your missus would ever let you in the door again, then Aisling was going to dump you right in your arse and leave you there in the mess that was your brand new life. Nothing. Just that thick breathing. This is it. There's nothing left of McCann. Between us and Aisling, we've taken the lot. If he's going to talk, it's from this seething, nowhere place we've brought him to. Steve says quietly, "You're in love with her, weren't you?" McCann's head lifts. His eyes move across us like he's blind. His mouth opens and he takes one shallow breath and holds on to it for a long moment before he says, "No comment." It stays in the air like a dark spot. The room looks skewed to the point of insane, all those cute colours and smarmy little comforts straining to cover the grinning white interview room bones, table, chairs, camera, one-way glass underneath. Steve says, "When you walked in on our getting ready for Rory, did that hit you out of the blue? Or did you already have your suspicions?" No comment. "Talk to us, man. What did she say? Did she tell you to get out and not come back? Did she laugh at you for thinking a woman like her could love you? What?" No comment. He's not even trying to look at us. Not anymore. He's staring at the wall between our heads, blank-eyed, tuning us out so everything we say is just a faraway babble. I've seen that look before. On rapists, murderers. The ones we're never going to break. Because they know what they are. And they're not fighting it. "Where were you last Saturday evening?" Steve asks. No comment. The click of the door handle turning makes me and Steve jump. McCann doesn't move. Breslin stands in the doorway, rain glittering on his black overcoat, smiling at us all. Chapter 17. "Mac," Breslin says, "you're wanted in the squad room." McCann looks up at him. Their eyes meet for a second that shuts me and Steve out completely. "Go on," Breslin says. "I'll catch up with you in a few." McCann pulls himself out of his chair, joint by joint, and heads for the door. Breslin gives him a quick clap on the shoulder as he passes. McCann nods automatically. "Interview terminated at 3:24 p.m. Breslin says, strolling over to the camera. He reaches up and switches it off as he turns to the water cooler. "Well, well, well. Look who's best buddies again. Sweet." I say, "I'd like to know what made you think we weren't best buddies all along." "You'll have to forgive me if I don't give a damn about your relationship right this minute. You just had the brass neck to accuse my partner." "We'll talk about that when I say so. Right now, I want to know which one of the floaters went squealing to you yesterday morning. Told you me and Moran had had a row." "Riley," Steve says, "wasn't it? We started arguing, he stopped typing." I remember that. The sudden heavy silence where that witless clacking had been battering my brain. I told you Riley was a bright spark, Breslin says. Unlike me, apparently. I spent 20 minutes sitting in the top house before the penny dropped. Well, fair play to you, Conway. You make a very convincing South Dublin airhead. I didn't know you had it in you. He raises his water cup to me. I was lucky with traffic, though. Got back in time to catch the good parts of the show.
He must catch a flick of surprise off one of us, because he laughs.
You thought I got back from my road trip and came charging straight in to save Mac from you two big, scary Avengers. I was in the observation room, because I knew Mac didn't need saving, seeing as he's done nothing. Well, apart from sticking his dick in the wrong place, which isn't a hanging offence in my book. But I think we can all agree he's had a tough few days. So when I saw you two going all out to wreck his head, I figured it might be time to call a halt.
He wanders over to the table, flicks up the Murray family photo to have a long look.
Huh, no wonder Mac didn't recognise her.
He flips the photo back at the table, ignores it when it misses and spins to the ground.
So, he says, all the time I thought we were working together. All the time I was getting a lovely warm feeling about what beautiful interviews we pulled off with Rory. This was what was going on in your heads. Tell me, when you looked in the mirror this morning, you didn't taste just a little bit of sick in the back of your throats?
Breslin doing what he does best. Feels strange, somehow. It feels like a loss that I don't have the faintest urge to punch his face in. And all the time I thought we were working together, I say. All the time I was enjoying those beautiful interviews. You were keeping this back? You want to throw stones? His eyes snap wide and he points a finger at me.
No, 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 Conway. Don't you try to turn this around on me. You've just proved that I was dead fucking right not to let you in. This interview?
His mouth twists up in disgust. He takes a swig of water to wash it away.
Go ahead. Tell me. What do you think you accomplished with this interview?
I say. We got enough for a warrant on McCann's gaff.
Breslin thinks that over, nodding. A warrant. Nice. And what are you planning on finding in there?
Those brown leather gloves McCann wears all winter? The ones I haven't seen once this week? Either we'll find Aisling's blood on them, or we won't find them at all.
Wow, Breslin says, raising his eyebrows. Impressive.
I'd say Mac will be shitting himself if he heard that.
Shall I save you some hassle? Would you like to hear what actually happened?
Love to, I say. From McCann, but...
Breslin clicks his tongue. Not gonna happen. Mac's got more sense than to put it on the record. To be honest, after that little stunt you pulled, I'd be amazed if he ever wants to talk to either of you again, on or off the record. But I figure it'll simplify all our lives if you know the facts, Steve says.
And it'll be unrecorded, unverifiable, inadmissible hearsay.
Them's the breaks. Do you want to hear this or not?
Deep down, I don't. When McCann left the room, he took something with him. Some dark, savage charge sizzling the air. Without him at its heart, the room's gone flat and sickly and stupid. I just want to walk out and keep walking. Anywhere, I don't have to think about what comes next or look at Breslin's self-righteous gob. I lean back in my chair and rub my hands over my face, trying to find some of that charge again.
Okay, Steve says, let's hear it.
Don't do me any favours.
We'd like to know.
Conway? Why not? I say. I take my hands off my face, but I don't have the energy to straighten up.
Breslin doesn't join us at the table. He tosses his water cup in the bin, sticks his hands in his pockets and starts pacing, a leisurely stroll. The cool professor explaining something to his enthralled students.
Saturday evening, he says. Mac had dinner at home with his family, and then he decided to call into Aisling. He got there around 7:45, give or take.
He didn't check his watch. He went in the back door to the kitchen, same as usual. The lights were on, and he could see Aisling had been in the middle of cooking dinner. But she didn't call out or come to meet him. Mac went into the sitting room and found her lying there, with her head on the fireplace.
"Must have been a shock," Steve says.
Breslin shoots him a sharp glance, but Steve's face is blank.
"It was, yeah, obviously. Most people would have gone to bits. Most civilians would have. Mac was devastated, but he kept it together. That doesn't make him a killer. It makes him a cop."
"He also found the table set for a romantic dinner," I say. "That must have been a shock too. What did you make of that?" Breslin says, in a voice meant to tell me his patience isn't going to last forever, "He didn't make anything of it, Conway, to the extent that he even thought about it, what with his girlfriend's body lying there on the floor in front of him. He took it for granted the dinner was meant for him, just in case he decided to turn up, which he sometimes did. He thought someone had gained entry to the house, maybe a perv, more likely a junkie. And let's be honest, it's not the nicest area, is it? And Aisling had come off worst. Later, it occurred to him that Aisling might have been seeing someone on the side and it could have gone wrong. But at the time, that didn't even come into his head. As Moran just pointed out, he was in shock." Steve asks, "Was Aisling alive?" Breslin shakes his head. "Mac checked her pulse and her breathing straight away. So yeah, he probably did get blood on his gloves. And he may even have got rid of them because of that. She was gone."
"Minutes or hours," Cooper said. "Probably progressed rapidly. It all plays, so far."
"It's bollocks. But a jury might go for it,"
I say. "So he rang it straight in and got a team of D's on the scene." He stares at me, those pale pop eyes frozen too hard to blink. "Don't be cute, Conway. Just don't. This isn't the moment. Maybe you genuinely believe that's what you would have done in his place, but it's bullshit. If Mark had called it in, he would have been at the centre of a murder investigation, meaning he would have been working a desk till this was sorted. However long that took, if the case didn't get cleared, he would have been finished as a murder D. There's no way you can be an effective investigator when you're under suspicion yourself. He would have lost his wife and kids. Quite possibly he would have ended up going on trial. There was a chance he could have ended up going to prison for life. And for what? He hadn't done anything. He didn't have any info that could help the investigation. He would have been throwing himself on his sword, personally and professionally, for nothing. If you genuinely think you're that much of a saint, I'm delighted for you. But I'm not convinced. The thing I'm not about to tell Breslin, I don't have a clue what I would have done. I can picture it, clear as a nightmare, standing there in the middle of somebody else's bloody wreckage, feeling it silt up fast and faster around my ankles, my calves, my knees, and thinking, no. I stare right back at him. What I would do doesn't matter. What did McCann do? He cleared the house, in case the assailant was still inside, which he wasn't. When McCann was sure the guy was gone, he wiped the place down to get rid of his old fingerprints. Honest to God, Conway, I'm going to need you to take off that superior disapproving face. I can't concentrate while I have to look at that. There's no expression on me at all. Breslin just wants me in the wrong. If you don't like my face, I say, you can look at Moran or shut your eyes for all I care. Breslin sighs, shakes his head and makes a big deal of turning his shoulder to me and focusing all his attention on Steve. So, McCann wiped for prints. He had a look around Aisling's bedroom to see if she'd kept any of his notes, which she hadn't, at least not in the obvious places. He considered sticking around in case the assailant came back, but he decided that was unlikely enough that it wasn't worth the risk. Steve says, all puzzled, furrowed brow.
Why'd you turn off the cooker?
That's been bothering me from the start.
So that any evidence wouldn't be destroyed, I snort.
Fingerprints aren't everything, Conway. McCann knew the killer could have left behind DNA. Hairs, fibres, valuable stuff. He wasn't about to ruin that. And he didn't want the place to catch on fire and burn Aisling to death. If by some tiny chance he was wrong and she was still alive. And,
Breslin smiles a little sad smile.
He didn't say this to me, because Mac doesn't like looking like a sap any more than you or I do. But I'm pretty sure he also couldn't stand the idea of Aisling's body being burned. He was fond of her, you know?
Ah, I say. I half expect Steve to move, signalling to me to dial it back, but he doesn't. Steve's gone past wanting to be buddies with Breslin.
Conway, just stop. I know you hate this squad and everyone in it, but think like a fucking detective for a second, instead of a teenage reject who's finally got one up on the popular girls. If Mac had killed Aisling, why would he turn off that cooker? He would have turned it up to full and hoped the place burned to the ground.
I say, what did he do next? Breslin sighs through gritted teeth.
He went out the back door, locked it behind him and went home. Don't bother checking the CCTV. You won't find him. Not Saturday night, not any night. It's easy enough to find out where the cameras are and plan your route around them. If it came to a divorce, Mac wasn't about to give his wife anything a private dick could turn up to use against him.
Of plays. Of course it plays. Just like McCann's story does. And Rory's. And Lucy's. All these stories. They hum like fist-sized hornets in the corners of the ceiling, circling idly, saving their strength. I want to pull out my gun and blow them away. Neatly, one by one, vaporize them into swirls of black grit drifting downwards and gone. I ask, when did he tell you all this?
He phoned me as soon as his wife went to sleep.
In fairness, Conway, it's not exactly like he could have that conversation while he was walking through town on a Saturday night, or on the sofa with his missus watching telly beside him. He took the first chance he got.
I say, and you believed him.
That whips Breslin around to face me full on. Yes, Conway, yes, I do believe him. Partly it's because of a little thing called loyalty, which you apparently haven't got the first clue about. He's my partner. If I catch him with a dead body at his feet and a smoking gun in his hand, it's my job to believe he's been framed. But mostly, it's because I know Mac. I've known him for a long, long time. You'll be lucky if you ever have a partner you know like I know Mac. There's no fucking way he did this.
My eyes meet Steve's for a second. I can't tell whether Breslin believes that load, or whether he's convinced himself he does because he needs to be that guy, the noble knight standing by his partner through thick and thin. Probably it's the second one, which means it's here to stay. You can knock down a genuine belief if you load up with enough facts that contradict it. But a belief that's built on nothing except who the person wants to be. Nothing can crumble that. We could show Breslin video of McCann bashing Aisling's face in, and the noble knight will find a way around it.
Do you two get that? Is that going into your heads?
Yeah, I say.
And you called it into Stony Batter.
I did,
yeah.
And just by the way, McCann knew I was doing it, and he agreed. As soon as the initial shock wore off, he started thinking like a cop again. Because that's who he is. Not a killer. A cop.
Uh-huh.
So why did you wait till 5 in the morning? If McCann called you as soon as his wife went to sleep, we're talking what, midnight?
Why wait 5 hours?
Breslin sighs and holds up his hands.
Okay. You got me. Good for you. I wanted to be sure I'd be there when the case came into the squad. Obviously, McCann wasn't going to come within a mile of the investigation or the whole thing could collapse. Honourable, I say. I'm impressed. Breslin throws me a filthy look, but he doesn't bother answering. But we figured I should keep an eye on things, see if there was a moment when Mac needed to come forward. That kind of... Conway, why are you even bothering to listen to me if you're just going to sneer at everything I say? Would you be happier waiting outside while I have an actual conversation with Moran? See if there was a moment when you could send investigating detectives off on a wild goose chase, more like. This week must have been hilarious for you, was it? Watching me and Moran chase our tails? Breslin's across the room so fast I almost flinch. What are you accusing me of? No! With a finger in my face when I start to answer. You be careful. You be very fucking careful. I'm done with being very fucking careful. I slap his finger away hard enough that I see the flare in his eyes when he thinks about hitting me. But no such luck. Steve's half out of his chair, but he has a sense not to come in. You've been obstructing my investigation. That's not an accusation, that's a fucking fact. You've been playing bent cop, so that if me and Moran found anything linking McCann to Aisling, we'd have a beautiful dead end to chase till you could get Rory Fallon oven ready, waving 50s around, giving Gaffney the brush off, inventing sketchy phone calls. Did Riley hand you that too? Go running to you, squealing about how we were looking at gang members. Breslin laughs at the top of his lungs, right in my face. You think I needed Riley for that? The two of you told me yourselves. First you demand to know who ran Aisling through the system and why, and then Sunday afternoon, Moran, when the gaffer called you in. You know what you left open on your computer? A search for Dublin-based males aged 20 to 50 with a history of gang activity. And Monday morning, Conway, along you came, pouring on the fake concern about whether I was stressed over money troubles. You seriously thought I was too thick to put two and two together? In the corner of my eye, I can see Steve's blazing redner. Mine probably matches it, me poking every shadow with sticks, all ready for a poisoned nest of spies plotting to get me. And all that was in there was me, not being subtle enough and Steve forgetting to hit exit. Breslin steps back and spreads his arms. If you think I obstructed your investigation, go ahead and file a complaint. What are you going to put in it? Breslin paid for his sandwich the wrong way. Breslin didn't want Gaffney hanging off him. He's got a grin on him, a nasty one. If you saw anything dodgy there, kids, it was in the eye of the beholder. If you went chasing after some wild hare, that was all on you, not my problem. Neither of us answers that. I can still smell Breslin's aftershave. If you don't have enough to file a complaint, Breslin says, then I think you owe me an apology. I say, now we're going to tell you our story. And it's a lot better than yours. His face pulls into a grimace of pure disbelief. What are you talking about? This isn't about who's got the best story, Conway. This is about what actually happened on Saturday night, and I've already told you that. Humour me. Don't worry. Ours is shorter than yours too. Breslin sighs, long and noisy, and makes a big thing of pushing mugs out of the way so he can settle his arse against the counter. All right, he says, folding his arms. Go for it. Blow me away. Saturday evening, I say. McCann had dinner at home, and then decided to call round to Aisling. He hadn't given her any notice, but that wasn't supposed to matter. She was supposed to be available whenever he wanted her. He got there some time after 7:40, when Rory left the laneway to go to Tesco. McCann went over the wall and in the back door, same as usual. Breslin's nodding away, giving me a wide-eyed stare of disbelief. Isn't this the same story he told us? Hang on, I say. This is where it gets good. He found Aisling all dressed up and cooking dinner. and he didn't get the welcome he was expecting. She obviously didn't want him there. McCann went out into the sitting room to see what was going on, and he found the table all set for a romantic dinner that he knew bloody well didn't involve him.
By that point, Steve says, his whole life was hanging on Aisling Murray. He was getting ready to leave his wife, his kids.
I'm guessing Breslin knew that already, I say. Breslin rolls his eyes to the ceiling.
McCann had ripped up what he thought was going to be the rest of his life, Steve says, thrown it away and rewritten it from scratch around Aisling.
Gobshite, I say, aside to Steve, and see the flash of anger in Breslin's eye.
Steve says, and she set it on fire.
I wonder how much she told him, I say.
Not the whole story anyway, not the bit about our dad.
You saw his face when we brought that out. Genuine shock.
Oh, yeah. She never got that far. But I'd say she made it pretty clear that her and McCann were done and he needed to get the hell out rapid so she could bang her new fella in peace.
Ouch, Steve says, wincing. No wonder he lost the head.
Anyone would. Anyone.
I would.
Most people would lose it a lot worse than that. One second out of control. One punch. That's nothing. No way he could guess it would end like this.
Breslin, still leaning back with his arms folded, watching us under his eyelids, with a wry smile twisting one corner of his mouth.
It's a cute story. So this was just a silly little manslaughter. No big deal. And Max should own up and take a slap on the wrist like a good boy.
I say, what do you think he should do? Keep his mouth shut? Go back to the squad and his missus like nothing ever happened?
I do, actually. Because your cute story falls apart the second I start looking at it like an actual detective. Psychologically, it makes bugger all sense. And while I don't normally give too many fucks about the psychological stuff, in this case you've got literally nothing else. So I figure it's worth a bit of attention. First off,
he raises a finger. Why would Rory come as some big shock to Mac? Enough of a shock to make him punch a woman in the face. Hard enough to kill her. Mac wasn't in love with Aisling. If you don't believe that, there's the fact that he had told Aisling she was welcome to see other people. Witness the fact that she invited Rory to her place, where she knew Mac might show up any time, rather than going over to his. If you don't believe that, you've got Lucy's evidence that Mac had access to Aisling's phone. Specifically because he wanted to check her texts. That phone is packed with weeks worth of texts to and from Rory, including one setting up that dinner date. And you're telling me Rory would have shocked Mac right out of his mind? I say, by the time Rory came on the scene, McCann wasn't reading Aisling's texts anymore. Too embarrassed. Plus, he hadn't found anything worth reading.
Yeah. I saw you humiliate him over that. You got him good there, guys. Well done.
Breslin throws us a few slow claps. But if Mac had cared that much about whether Aisling had another guy on the side, I'm thinking he would have managed to overcome a bit of embarrassment in check her texts, whether he felt like admitting it to you two or not.
Steve says, unless Aisling had him fooled well enough that it never occurred to him she might be seeing someone else.
Sure, which would mean he's not the jealous type, which would mean he wouldn't lose the plot when he found out.
We're back where we started. It doesn't add up psychologically. And the second problem, Breslin raises another finger, Rory could have turned off that cooker because he didn't like the smell, or because his mummy trained him never to leave appliances on. Mac couldn't have. He's not some civilian pussy boy who'd go to pieces and do dumb shit for no good reason. Even under serious stress, he was thinking straight. Straight enough to wipe the joint for Prince, remember? He wasn't going to touch anything in that house without a solid reason. If he'd killed Aisling, if he knew that all the forensics would point to him, and burning the gaff down could only help him get away with it, why the hell would he turn off the cooker?
I say, so the smoke alarm wouldn't go off.
McCann was thinking straight, all right. He needed time to wipe the house down,
And more than that, he realised Aisling's fella could come in very useful. A boyfriend on the spot, all on his own, with no one to vouch for his actions, right around the time of the attack. Man, that's a killer's dream. Breslin's shaking his head, doing a small smile of pure disgust. I don't care. The only problem was, I say, seeing as McCann hadn't actually been reading Aisling's texts, he didn't know exactly when the boyfriend was due to arrive. Even if he checked her phone and found the appointment time, which he didn't want to do, because the text would be able to see that he'd done it, and when, that didn't guarantee that the boyfriend wouldn't be running late. If McCann left the cooker on, it might set off the smoke alarm, and Aisling might be found, while this fella was still somewhere else, with an alibi. Even if McCann disabled the alarm, he risked having a neighbour or the boyfriend notice smoke and call it in while the boyfriend could still be excluded. The cooker had to be turned off. Breslin shrugs. I suppose you might be able to argue that. Like I said, it's a cute story. But that's all it is. There's nothing solid underneath. You can prove that Mac had an affair with Aisling. Good for you. But when it comes to Saturday night, you can prove exactly bugger all. You've got an ID from the prime suspect, who has every motive to drag someone else into this mess. You've got some bizarre, convoluted story you heard from some woman who may or may not have been the Vic's best friend. May or may not have been in love with the Vic herself, and may or may not be holding a jealous grudge against the lucky guy who got to shag the Vic. And if you actually get a warrant to search Max Gaff, which I can't believe you'd be stupid enough to do, you'll probably have proof that he's lost his brown gloves. And that's it. That's what you've got. Silence. What are you planning to do with it? More silence. Yeah. That's what I thought. Breslin fills himself another cup of water and we listen to the bubbles force their way up the cooler. He takes a long, deliberate sip before he says, I hope you two realise what you've done to this case. Neither of us bites. You've fucked it right up the ass. Do you get that? You'll never get McCann for this because A, you've got no evidence that he did it, and B, he didn't do it. Fallon did. If you actually try going after Mac, the prosecutor will laugh your file right out of his office. If you somehow manage to get him into court, which you won't, the defence will pull in Rory Fallon and your mountain of actual evidence against him, and the jury will acquit before the jury room door closes. Wouldn't you? Be honest. If you were on the jury and the sum total of the evidence was what you've just told me, would you vote to convict? Me and Steve don't answer. Of course you wouldn't. Neither would anyone else in the country, except maybe the odd cop-hater who'd vote to convict him of being Jack the Ripper. But now that you've opened up this whole can of worms with Mac, you're never gonna get Fallon. The prosecutors get him into court, the defence pulls in McCann, wrecks his marriage and possibly his career in the process. But hey, that's not your problem, am I right? And bang, reasonable doubt. Bye-bye Rory, have a nice life, see you when your next girlfriend pisses you off. He raises his cup to an imaginary Rory. You're done, kids. All you've got left to do here is pack up your case file and send it down to the basement and, of course, find a good explanation to give the gaffer and the media for why this case has crashed into a wall and poor Aisling won't be getting the justice she deserves. Are you proud of yourselves? Does this feel like a good week's work to you? We stay silent. There's nothing we could say that has any point to it. Breslin sighs and strolls over to the video camera. The only thing we can do with this mess, he says, is keep it from ruining McCann's life. Frankly, after what you've put him through for absolutely no good reason,
That's the least you can do.
He reaches up to the video camera, hits the eject button, and pulls out the tape.
Am I right that you had more sense than to log this interview anywhere?
Steve nods.
When you got McCann to come with you, you managed not to make it obvious what you were doing.
Nod.
You haven't taken an official statement from Lucy Reardon.
I shake my head.
Let's all thank God for small mercies, Breslin says. He brings the videotape down in his palm with a flat rattle. So the last hour or so never happened. You'll get rid of those photo arrays and take a nice, appropriate statement from Lucy. I'm sure you can figure out a way to do that. I'll explain to the gaffer that you've been doing a fine job, but we're not getting enough for a charge that'll hold up. So we've decided to backburner Rory Fallon for now, keep working the forensics and electronics, and hope something pops up down the road. Or more like reassure the gaffer that he's got me and Steve under control, like he promised to all along. I can hardly stand to look at his face.
The gaffer'll hold off the media till they find something else to gnaw on. We'll keep an eye on Rory, make sure his near miss keeps him scared straight, and we'll all live happily ever after.
Breslin brings the tape down on his palm again.
Does that sound like a plan?
After a moment, I say.
Yeah.
Morn.
Steve takes a breath.
Yeah.
It's not going to run into any glitches along the way, am I right?
I say.
No glitches.
Good.
Breslin tucks the tape inside his jacket and heads for the door. With his hand on the handle, he turns for an exit line.
It might be a while before you get this, he says. But you two owe me big time. I'm sure it doesn't feel like it right now. But a few years down the road, when Rory Fallon gets locked and spills his guts to his new girlfriend, and you're still here to make the collar, you're going to realise I'm the best thing that ever happened to you.
I'll take my thank yous then. If they come with a nice bottle of bourbon thrown in, it won't go to waste.
Before either of us can come up with a sensible response to that steaming heap, he gives us a nod and he's gone. Bang of the door and fast, firm strides down the corridor, off to tell McCann that everything's going to be just fine. After a few moments, Steve bends to pick up the Murray family photo. He says,
I thought we had him there, McCann. When we brought this out, I really thought,
yeah.
I did too.
It was good that. It should have worked.
I let myself have 5 seconds to think about just how good that interview was. How good we were together. Me and Steve. How it felt like we could read each other's mind. I give myself those 5 seconds to understand what I'm losing.
No comment, Steve says.
He tucks the photo back into his jacket pocket, carefully, like it might matter again sometime.
I say, we should have seen it.
Way back at the very beginning, when Lucy turned squirrely about Aisling's secret boyfriend, we should have seen it. Us running around chasing imaginary gangsters, whipping up drama about bent cops and shushing each other about complicated suspicions, when the obvious was jumping up and down in front of us, waving its arms for attention. I'm a fucking idiot for leaving that search on my computer, Steve says. No sleep. The gaffer called us in. I got rattled. No worse than me, trying to pump Breslin and making a balls of it.
Don't worry about it. If I hadn't started us down the whole gang road, I say, even if you hadn't, I don't think we would have seen it.
Steve said it days ago. Breslin is used to being the good guy. Any story that gets room in his head has to grow out of that beginning. It's not just Breslin. All of us D's know, certain sure, we're the good guys. Without that to stand on, there isn't a way through the parts of this job that are dark, dripping hell.
Breslin, the bent cop,
McCann, the bent cop. Those we could picture. There are cops who'll go that way. Always have been, hazarded the job. But a killer cop? One of our own transformed into the thing we spend our lives trying to bring down. That's different. That wrenches the world inside out. Even me. And I've got years worth of reasons to know that police aren't always good guys. When it was there in front of my face, my eyes weren't able to see it. Breslin and McCann at the top of the stairs, muttering about